Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents From Chef to Crafter to Conqueror. Chef by Gabriel Rathwick. Narrated by Leo Sorio. Chapter 1.
Hi-ya!
The diminutive pixie-like assassin yelled as she streaked forward, screaming like a banshee, and striking out at my seemingly unprotected face. My military-issued neural implant zoomed my vision in and highlighted my opponent, showing me the most likely vectors of her attack. A small grin broke out on my face as I backstepped the fierce woman's flying double kick, then deflected it with a couple of slight nudges with my left and right forearms. After successfully warding off her blows, I reversed my momentum and shuffled forward with small, balanced, but quick steps, bringing me into close range with my tiny opponent. My plan was to use my superior size and strength advantage to make this a grappling fight. That was my first mistake. My second was forgetting my opponent had her own neural implant. Stupid technology messing up my tactics. Why can't things just be like they used to be? I bigger and stronger than you, so I win. You lose. She growled at me in response to my smile, her face turning an even darker shade of red. And not only did she not retreat, she moved forward with a surprising quickness, coming into my grappling range of her own volition. The move surprised me, and instead of me grabbing her and taking her down to the ground for a submission hold, she moved inside, getting under my guard. Then she gripped my right arm with both her own and pulled me forward while using my momentum to take me down to the ground. Hard. Simultaneously, she jumped up and onto my back, still gripping my arm, then turning the hold into an arm bar, she rode me down to the mat like a rodeo cowgirl. I fell uncontrollably, crashing into the floor like her human mount. My left arm flailed wildly, but eventually made it to the mat ahead of my face, breaking my fall somewhat. It didn't break it enough to stop my nose, followed by the rest of my moneymaker and then body, from slamming into the mat with a loud, crunching thud. Having been a practitioner of the mixed martial arts, Brazilian jiu-jitsu to be exact, for quite a while, I was awfully familiar with dislocated limbs and broken bones, not to mention the sounds associated with said injuries. The loud crunch I just heard was my nose breaking as it became intimately familiar with the training room floor. A groan escaped my lips as I lay there, blood seeping from my facial appendage and the breath in my lungs gone, blasted from my organ by the tiny human weight on my back. My groan was cut short, though, as my opponent chose that moment to yank up hard on my right arm that was still held in an armbar by said opponent. "Gah!" I screamed. At least I tried to, but the lack of air in my body and the excessive amount of blood blocking all my facial orifices that would inhale said air made it a gesture in futility. "Oh, stop it, you big baby," the woman on my back teased in her soft yet sultry voice that was the antithesis of the actions she had just performed. My arm was eventually released, and the weight was removed from my back as my sparring partner let me go and stood up, clapping her hands together as if wiping them off. The blood had already stopped flowing, and my broken nose was already starting to feel better as the medical nanobots in my body began their self-healing and repairing duties.
"Did you have to break my nose? Seriously, I think you dislocated my shoulder, too," I replied in an almost intelligibly nasal tone while rubbing my tender arm with my free hand. In response, my sparring partner scoffed, then tossed a gym towel at me, which I barely caught in time before it hit me in my tender schnoz.
"Yes, yes, I did. You know that your size and strength advantage is huge. If I don't go all out using my quickness and superior skills, you'd trounce me in a moment," she replied, gesturing nonchalantly at me with the water bottle in her hand before taking a long, deep drink.
I know, I know.
and I'm glad that I can help you train for the upcoming fight, but it still hurts. I do have some pride, you know, Mallory. The bit of whine in my tone causing her to raise an eyebrow at me questioningly before grinning and setting her water bottle down and walking toward me in a sultry manner.
Let me take care of you, you big baby.
Her tone completely different than before, containing a huskiness and sensuality that hadn't existed just a few moments earlier. I studied the tiny woman as she slowly sauntered forward, her walk a stereotype as she exaggerated each movement of her hips, legs, thighs, waist, and every other one of her perfectly toned and muscled body parts. Mallory had shoulder-length platinum blonde hair put up in a tight ponytail, showing off her perfect neckline, high cheekbones, sky-blue eyes, a small pert nose, and ruby-red petite but voluptuous lips. She was wearing a sports bra and a pair of capri workout pants that were so tight it looked like they were practically painted on, highlighting all her womanly gifts. The parts of her skin that were showing looked like coffee and cream-colored satin that felt even softer, which I knew from personal experience. I shook my head in futility as the love of my life closed in, and I smiled. The blood dried to my lips and cheeks, cracking as I did so. She didn't care, lasciviously grinning back.
Give Mama some sugar,
Mallory whispered as she stopped an inch from me, her face looking up and her eyes laughing, while she pulled my head down to her own and hungrily kissed me. The second our lips met, the universe went away. The world disappeared around me. The only thing I knew was the warmth of Mallory's lips and the curve of her waist as my hands encircled her and rested on her firm, muscled glutes. Our kiss seemed to last for an eternity, but like all good things, it eventually came to an end. Well, actually, more of an abrupt halt. Sirens sounded out from the ceiling above us, and we immediately broke up our kiss and stepped apart, looking at the source of the ear-grating sounds while simultaneously accessing our neural implants.
Alarm! Alarm! All personnel to battle stations. The ship is under attack. Alarm! Alarm!
The ship's AI called out on repeat in its slightly accented voice. I was always surprised that the AI had an accent at all, but put it from my mind as Mallory kissed me on the lips with a quick peck and then turned and moved with a sense of purpose towards the locker room doorway. The ship's automatic doors opened when she was close enough, but she paused in the portal, looking back over her shoulder.
See you after the battle, love.
Make something special for me.
I'm going to be hungry.
She said the last, the wink and a sultry smile that I couldn't help but mirror in return. But before I could say anything, she was gone.
Damn, that woman is going to be the death of me, I whispered to myself with a shake of my head,
my voice trailing off at the end as I smiled and headed off to get ready to go to my own battle station. Currently, I was in the ship's training room slash gym. Hurriedly, I went back into the locker room area. The hairs all over my body stood on end as I walked through the locker room entranceway, where the nanite field that covered the portal cleaned me from head to toe down to the smallest individual dirt and sweat particle. Oh, the benefits of joining the Space Force. See the galaxy? And do it as clean as a whistle from the bottom of your toes to the tip of your head. The big and little, as a matter of fact. I grinned at the old enlistment joke and quickly dressed in my duty uniform, then rushed out of the gym, the automatic doors closing behind me as I quick-timed it down the ship's corridor. Seriously, though, the surgical neural implant and nanobots were enough for most people to enlist for at least one term in the Space Force. Who wouldn't want to get an extra 150 years of perfect health and longevity along with access to humanity's entire library of knowledge with just a thought. I guess that was a bit of an exaggeration, but still, it was close. Humanity had long ago learned the benefit of the carrot over the stick. Although, by no means did they stop using the stick completely, they just realized that they got better results with the carrot, most of the time. One of the results was that by joining any branch of the armed forces, one would be equipped with the latest medical treatment and nanotechnology. On your first day of your military service branch's boot camp, you were given quite an extreme haircut, no matter your gender. Bye-bye luscious locks or coiffed dreads. Next, they gave you your uniforms and then sent you to the hospital center to spend the majority of the rest of the day at medical call. Here they shot you up full of all sorts of disease-preventing, established and experimental, vaccines, and other lovely medical treatments. Then you got a military-grade dose of nanobots directly into your bloodstream, where they repair any and all body ailments down to the cellular level, even those that were self-induced or genetic. After which, the next few hours are spent in agonizing pain in a hospital bed while your body adjusts to the new nano-sized additions to your physiology. The pain's totally worth it, though, as you never have to worry about any injury smaller than losing a limb, having your head lopped off, or complete organ destruction. Hell, you can even survive a stab to the heart, albeit some of the time. Another added benefit was the longer lifespan. The nanobots extended your life almost 150 to 200 years, and most of that was at peak physical condition. Tack on never getting sick with any virus or disease, even the common cold and coronavirus weren't things anymore. You really couldn't beat the pros of enlisting. Once your body adjusted, it was over to the optics lab where they installed your neural implant, which had all the military-grade bells and whistles along with the standard civilian abilities. The neural implant allowed you to access all computer and electronic devices in your immediate vicinity that you had valid permissions for, with only your thoughts. Although some things like door plates, hand weapons, and such required manual manipulation, the implant also gave you access to the human race's greatest collection of data and information that contained all of human history and knowledge, the Encyclopedia of Humanity. It was connected with the universal internet and was constantly updated with all the latest information from pre-ancient Egypt to interstellar space travel and more. Anything that humans or AI had figured out that you wanted to know about was there. It could be explained to you in a modular and specific way that catered to your personal learning style. Whether learning was optical, auditory, or directly induced to the brain depended on what was most efficient for each person. The rub was that it could only give you access to the information. Calling it up and applying it was up to the user, as it had been throughout time immemorial. Ultimately, you had to use old-fashioned elbow grease and hard work to effectively apply and get skilled at anything you learned. The positive was that the information was there for you to access. The rest was up to you. For example, you couldn't just jump to advanced particle physics. You had to learn basic arithmetic, multiplication, algebra, geometry, trigonometry, etc. You get the idea. No free lunch, as they say, but they do give you the ingredients to make you the sandwich artist you've always aspired to become. I grinned at the memories of a younger, more naive me who thought I'd become a veritable super-talented genius just by the addition of the tech. These thoughts and more flew through my mind as I walked down the corridor. My ruminations turned away from my past and drifted to my tiny, beautiful, sexy, and extremely formidable sparring partner. Sonia, or I should say, Ensign Mallory, was the senior fire control officer and stationed on the bridge, and as such was essential personnel during emergencies. My own position was not nearly so illustrious, but even so, I was still required by battle regulations to man my station.
I always remember the answer my first chief once told me when I asked him why during my first deployment. His response was simple.
People gotta eat.
I still remember his gruff, raspy voice from cereal vaping, and I smiled a bit wider. That man taught me a metric fuckton about how to organize and run a mess hall. I arrived at my post with a nostalgic grin as the automatic double doors opened, and I strode into my domain, the ship's mess. FS3 Burks saw me and called out as I entered.
Chief!
He gave me a small two-fingered salute, but kept on with what he was doing, which, judging by his movements and smell, was kneading some dough for fresh-baked bread, of which the first loaf was already in the convection oven. I nodded in approval and continued through the dining area and into the kitchen proper, joining the rest of my kitchen crew, all of whom had arrived before me. Calls of Chief rang out as they saw me. I called greetings back while not interfering with any of their work. All 10 of my guys and gals were damn good at what they did, and were trained as well as they could be by yours truly. They all knew their duties and executed them with alacrity and professionalism. That was another thing my old chief imparted. Train like hell, whether in good times or bad. He always said it was all muscle memory, and if the crew worked hard in training, then it wouldn't matter if it was normal breakfast prep or an emergency battle rationing during a particle beam exchange.
Looking good, everyone. Keep it up. Those spacers are going to be hungry as hell when this battle is over. Remember, people gotta eat. My team groaned good-naturedly at my oft-repeated line.
I cheered my expertly trained FS, food service team, on with a call of good job here and a constructive suggestion on a dish there. Satisfied that all was in order, I headed to the rear of the kitchen to my personal workspace and checked over my mise en place. After nodding satisfactorily to myself that everything was in order, I looked over at my team again and saw they were still getting the main meal ready for the crew. Then I got started on the officer's meal. The tradition for the officers of a naval ship, in this case, spaceship, was to have a different meal than the rest of the crew, and it went all the way back to the antiquated navies of Earth. Back then, the officers were all of the nobility, and they would gather for their meals that were paid for by their personal funds and were of significantly better quality than the normal crew fare. This tradition continued on throughout human history, even to the point of being a part of our current Space Force's tradition. Although now the regular crew meals were of quality on par with the officers and paid for by the government. The main difference being preparation and not ingredients or cost. With the advent of the organic 3D printer, foodstuffs became an infinite resource, and we could now create any type of raw food ingredient in existence. Preparation, however, was another story, and that was where the Food Service Corps and chefs like yours truly came into play. Even though any ingredient could be made, it took a true craftsman, artist, if you will, to make an exemplary and delicious dish. The klaxon alarm sounded out again, and I braced myself as the ship's shields blocked the first salvo of the enemy plasma blasts, causing the ship to rock in response. My team was so well trained, though, that they immediately went back to work after the ship steadied, though the alarms didn't stop. I nodded to myself, not surprised considering how much we trained, but still impressed with their professionalism. It was something I was taught from a young age. Diligence and hard work led to industriousness and success. My father's heritage was predominantly a mix of Japanese and Korean, which was rare nowadays because most people were like my mother, who was a conglomeration of many races. The interesting thing about my father's heritage, not only being rare, was that the cultures he descended from were crazy about hard work, diligence, and industriousness. I think, due to that heritage, he instilled a concept called Kaizen in me from an incredibly young age. Kaizen is essentially the idea of doing something over and over ad nauseam, and improving on it, slowly, over time, until you reach a state of perfection, which you can never truly reach. It's actually a bit more complicated than that, but that's the gist of it. My thoughts drifted back to my father while my body went on autopilot, grabbing and prepping ingredients one after the other for the officer's meal, with the practice ease of a true master chef. I had done the tasks so many times my hands moved of their own accord, whether chiffonating aromatic greens or peeling, slicing, and dicing root vegetables and starches, I could do it all even in my sleep. He had passed away the year before I enlisted in the Space Force, right at the turn of the century, December 2099. It had been a pretty shitty Christmas overall that year. First, I had been dumped by my high school girlfriend, which had seemed so important before the accident. Before the war. I knew the two weren't related in reality, but in my mind, I always connected them. It was one of the reasons I put so much effort into cooking, why I joined the military, and why I pushed myself as hard as I could. Even though it was as a chef and not a traditional frontline fighter. That long-ago morning, we had a fight. To this day, I still couldn't remember exactly what it was about. It was some dumb thing, a chore I hadn't done, not having cleaned my room or something like that. What I did remember was calling him a selfish asshole as I walked out the door for school. That was it. And that was the last time I saw him. A semi-truck had plowed into his car while he was driving through an intersection on his way to work. The stoplight had malfunctioned, and the self-driving truck didn't stop. It was a freak one-in-a-million accident, they said. It was just plain bad luck, they said. That night, the first shots of the First Intergalactic War were fired. The space colonies of Mars, the moons of Jupiter, and the various other space-based mining cooperatives had banded together. They created the Independent Space Confederacy, and promptly seceded from the United Earth Federation. The leaders of our Earth government couldn't let that happen, and they sent ships out to Mars to end the rebellion. Unbeknownst to the Earth fleet, the ISC was ready and pretty much mopped the floor with the Earth Expeditionary Forces. A call to arms by the powers that be went out, calling on all patriots of the Earth. My father had served in the military, and whether or not it was because of our fight before he died, I felt like I owed it to him to join. So the next day I enlisted. It was my way of making it up to him. I know that doesn't quite make sense, but I was a dumb teenage kid, and it sounded good at the time. Plus, I was a red-blooded young 18-year-old who was full of heroic thoughts of piloting spacecraft and saving our Earth Empire running rampant through my head. Boy, was I wrong on all accounts. I enlisted in Space Force to fly spaceships or space fighters, but I didn't know that there was an AI placement system that picked the best job for you. They said it knew what suited one's specific talents. My talents were apparently cooking food. This was due to my family owning a restaurant and me having learned the skills to be a cook at a young age from being forced to help out. But come on, I didn't join the Space Force to be a goddamn cook. I could have stayed home and done that in our family's restaurant. At first, this was a huge blow to my ego. I was severely depressed, but I used my dad's passing as motivation and decided to give it my all, despite my personal feelings. He had also taught me to suck it up and not be a victim. It was as if after he died, all the stupid platitudes and sayings he told me finally made sense. And my unfinished teenage brain had an epiphany that he had been right all along. Go figure. It took him dying for us to start seeing eye to eye. Anyway, I went into boot camp full speed ahead and gave it my all, graduating at the top of my class in every category from shooting to schooling to uniform maintenance. By the end of training, my drill instructors couldn't believe I was going into the Food Service Corps, and even though they objected, they were also subject to the AI's decisions. The ship rocked again, but I just rolled my lower body with the movement and continued the food prep. The 3D printer was creating ingredient after ingredient, and I grabbed each as they came slicing, dicing, peeling, and shredding. Basically, doing the dance of cooking with each of my practiced and precise movements, even as the walls and ground shook and alarms blared around me. I saw my crew shoot worried looks at each other and our surroundings, but they kept on cooking, regardless of their fear. This time, the shaking and rocking lasted for more than a few seconds, almost half a minute. Even my well-trained crew couldn't keep working through this as ingredients, cookware, and cooks fell uncontrollably to the deck or crashed into the bulkhead. I kept my feet, though, mostly thanks to my martial arts training, and when the ship finally settled, I went around helping up those of my staff that had fallen especially hard. Just as I lifted FS3 Clark up off the ground, the klaxon alarm began to sound in a different, more ominous way.
"Chief, that's the call to abandon ship,"
FS3 Clark squeaked, his voice cracking as he looked at me wide-eyed with fear. For a moment, when I heard the alarm, the same fear struck me. The fear of the unknown. The fear of being adrift in space. Escape pod or not, that was scary as hell. Thankfully, the young food serviceman, who was just a week shy of turning 19 years old, helped shake the fear from me before it could settle in. I cleared my throat and put on a stoic face, the same one I used whether I was fighting an MMA match or cooking veal tornado, and looked at the young man in the eyes. "Don't worry, FS3. You have nothing to fear but fear itself." I struck a slight pose as I quoted one of our most famous historical wartime leaders. My demeanor helped calm the young man down. Young man. I was only 5 years older than him. I shook my head at the thought. To his credit, he bucked up and even gave me a grin.
"Jeez, Chief, you even quote those old fogies at times like this? You really are a history nut."
FS3 Clark laughed, now somewhat in control of himself. I was about to tell him where he could stick his comment, but the ship rumbled and rolled again, and the rest of my culinary team shouted out in fear, bringing us back to our present situation. "Everyone, let's go. You hear the abandoned ship alarm? Don't panic. We've trained for this. Move out," I commanded, using my NCO voice for added effect. The familiar command voice eased my crew enough to shake off the fear, and they sprang into action. No one ran or panicked as we left the mess hall in an orderly and concerted fivesome, with me taking up the rear. Once out in the corridor, we kept moving with a sense of purpose, even though the hallway was shaking more often than not. With the klaxon alarm blaring deafeningly and the flashing emergency red lighting of the hall, the journey became a terrifyingly surreal experience. It was like some kind of jacked-up Lovecraftian carnival ride, but not a fun-filled, carny-full adventure. Instead, it was real life and death, with the promise of an endless freezing vacuum as the prize. We kept our proverbial shit together, though, and made it to the escape pods in a timely fashion. Luckily for us, the mess hall was on the same level as the escape pod bay, so we didn't need to take a lift or ladder to another deck. My sous chef, FS1 Trajan, hit the door panel on the wall, and before the escape pod portal finished opening, my crew was already quickly shuffling inside. "Shit! My father's knives!" I hissed as my crew left the blinking and shaking corridor and entered the already quarter-full bay ahead of me.
"Chief?"
FS1 Trajan asked, looking back at me questioningly and with not a little bit of trepidation. "Go ahead, FS1. I have to go back to the mess hall. I forgot something," I told him, then did an about-face and double-timed it back down the corridor.
My sous-chef's objections were lost in the blaring of the evacuation alarms. The rest of the ship's crew had begun abandoning...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?